Welcome to Prognosis. Awesome, we are back. It's been a while. It's been a while because life gets in the way, and I don't know, your brain gets taken over by all sorts of thoughts and different directions and wants and needs, and then all of a sudden it smashes you right in the fucking face with mortality. And mortality is something that I've talked about on this show before. I was lucky enough to do an episode of this show with my grandfather about 6 months before he died. He was 95 years old. And I just had this idea in my head. I got to interview this guy and get his thoughts down. Because when people are gone, they're fucking gone. And that's it. And that's kind of the reason for today's show. Because me and several people that I know and love, including a very beloved person who is on today's show, have lost someone who was, at certain points in our life, unbelievably important to us. And at other parts in our life, a very complicated part of our life that's difficult to talk about. But you know what? That's what we're here to do today. We're here to talk about a beloved friend, and honestly, mentor to me in many different ways, Aaron Butler, who passed last week. And we're going to chat about him and what he meant to us. And honestly, if any of you are listening to this out there, feel free to hit me up and we can chat about this, because he was an unbelievably important part of my life. And that's what we're here to talk about. And who I brought to do that with me today is one of the best listeners, empathizers, and just all around great people that I have in my life, who doesn't know this person and never met this person. But I'm glad to have her here today to talk us through complicated emotions that, frankly, I don't fucking understand, because I'm not any good at them, or do I know how to address them or whatever. But we have a beloved co-host, Gabby, today. Hi, Gabby.
Hey, Lou. How's it going?
Well, it's good. I figure it's time to have a talk about horrifying loss and despair and all that stuff. How do you feel about that, Gabby? How do you feel about talking about awful stuff today?
TGIF, man. I mean, let's just go. Let's do it. I feel like I am crashing awake and I'm excited about it because, they're real. The conversations you have at wakes can either be like, the pedophores are very nice today, and too bad we had rain, or you can really kind of see the impact a person has had on an entire community, which is beautiful, because often you don't even notice those things until they're gone. So I just moved away from Louisiana, where I'd been living for 2 years. I moved yesterday. And it kind of sucked for most of it. I was living during COVID. I didn't meet anybody. I was stuck in my apartment for most of it. But as I was living, I was like, there are a lot of things that I'll miss about this place. And so I just think those sorts of moments where you can reflect, particularly with others, is just such a beautiful part of humanity. So I'm excited to learn about this person who meant so much to so many people, and to listen and maybe ask some really crushing questions that'll get you right in the heartstrings.
I hope so. God, I could use a good crushing. Thank you. That's a great point to bring up. When I learned about Aaron, it forced me to really kind of think about a portion of my life, which is gone sort of unexamined due to many factors. And one of those factors is my sweet baby boy and guest on the show today, Ashish Mitra. Ashish was with me during these times, they almost seem like they were too extreme to have actually happened. And I want to chat with you about them, Ashish. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Lou. And, we haven't talked in a long time. And sometimes you talk when you're celebrating things, and you run into people in bars and restaurants, or just on the street, sometimes in another country, even. These things do happen. And other times you talk to people after a long time when we lose someone. And this happens to be one of those times. And Aaron's parting gift is to us is now we get to talk to each other and we get to talk about him.
Yeah, it is a sense of community. And after he passed, I started thinking, my first reaction is like, oh shit, he died. Wow, he was a nice guy. But then I started reflecting. I started really thinking about what he meant for me. And I, you know, I think the best way to do that is to tell the story of how I met Aaron. And I'm going to try to keep this as brief as possible, but I met Aaron at one of the very lowest parts of my life. Because I graduated law school in 2008. And for those of you who remember 2008, it was tough. It was a hard time. There were no jobs, nothing. I think a year out of law school, I took a little bit of a poll, and I think three of my graduating class, three people in my graduating class had jobs, and everybody else was unemployed. And it was very difficult. And I got to the point where I had $0 because I quit my previous job. I had $0. And I'm like, I can eat today. I just don't know if I can eat tomorrow. My God, I'm going to need to do something. So I started bartending. Like I started serving and then bartending. And that really provided me with an incredible new thing in my life, an incredible group of people. It helped me survive for a couple of years there, which is great. But then, like so many restaurant employees, I got fucking fired. She been fired before?
I'm thinking I've been around a little longer than you have. Have I been fired? Yes, I have been fired before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're in restaurants, you've been fired.
Yes.
It happens to all. Yeah. So anyways, I was at this restaurant and I got fired. I was kind of having like a really down part of my life thinking, God damn it, I paid all this money for this law school degree, which is apparently worthless and is good for nothing. I have no money. I just got out of debt from the last one. I've been deferring all my college loans, crush, 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 everything's going terrible. And I got a text message from my friend Jackie. And I was just way down in the dumps. It's February, I think. And it was one of these mega blizzards where like, everything is shut down. There's nowhere, all this sort of thing. But there was this one bar that no longer exists. And it was called Reruz, but I think at this point it was called Antuanua. And they did karaoke on Wednesday.
Antuanua, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been dead like 10 years now. But
yeah, it's been not for a while.
Yeah. So anyways, they did karaoke on Wednesdays. And this girl I went to law school with, Jackie, she's like, come out for karaoke. I was like, I'm so fucking depressed. Like, I'm so depressed. And it's literally like 3 feet of snow outside. Like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything. She's like, no, come. I'm like, no. I was like, all right, fucking fine. So I come and I show up and it's me, Jackie, my friend Leah, about three other people in the bar, maybe. And they were there with this guy, Aaron. And I'd never met this guy, Aaron, before. And we immediately just kind of hit it off. He's a super nice guy. We sang a song together. I forget what it was. And just out of nowhere, he's like, hey, do you want to work for me? I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, do you want to bartend for me? I'm like, sure. Because I had no job. I had no income. It was hard. I was like, oh, my God. And this guy that I met completely out of luck at a almost empty bar during a blizzard at one of the lowest parts of my life, I met him and I started working at this place, Russell House Tavern, which was such a seminal place in Cambridge for me and for Ashish and for everybody. And I was thinking about it today. I think because of Aaron in that complete chance meeting at Antuanua, I think that's how I met 2/3 of the people in my life. Because without that, I wouldn't have worked there. And then I wouldn't have worked at this place and the next place. So many of the relationships in my life are because of him. And Ashish, I wouldn't know you if it wasn't for Aaron. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, we touched on this the day that we talked, and it was much more immediate. Probably for both of us, though. I think you were running through the airport when we were talking.
Yeah.
I texted my wife before I heard back from you, I think. And I said, an old and a very good friend, I just found out, died, and I'm just in shock. Like,
yeah,
just in shock for a little while, and then you start reflecting, to use your word, about, you know, all the times you've had, but then, you know, how much that person, meeting that person and being in that person's orbit, has impacted the rest of my life. And, you know, to something else that you said earlier, like a transformative, you know, figure in sort of determining the trajectory of where I would be right now. And that cannot be, that's not understating. That's just the truth. You know, we meet a lot of people in restaurants, working in restaurants and bars, whether they're guests and customers, whether they're mentors, owners, or just coworkers. And very few of them make lasting impressions that cause pivot points in your future. And Aaron is definitely one of those people. So much so that it's kind of mind-blowing now to think, as you said, you know, two-thirds of the people that are in your life were somehow related to meeting Aaron at that night in Antuanua. And I could probably say confidently the same, if not more, of that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many decisions that I've made, people that I've met, and good things that have happened and bad things that have happened that can be traced back to getting hired by Aaron Butler and working for him for a short period of time.
Yeah. How did you meet him, Ashish?
So I don't have a story nearly as good as yours. I was working at another restaurant in Cambridge, and I was going on 3 years there. And I worked with a coworker of both of ours and Aaron for a while. This was before Russell House Tavern opened. And that coworker, ironically, was fired from our previous restaurant, but then got hired to open Russell House Tavern. And I think the Russell House had been open for almost a year, and I was getting tired of where I was. And he was like, here, come on board, come meet Aaron, blah, blah, blah. So, and I think you and I had met before that even. I think I sat at the bar at Russell House a couple of times before we started working together. But I mean, I was basically, this person handed Aaron a resume and said, you know, you need somebody, this other person's leaving, this person's great. So Aaron didn't really know me at all. It's just like you, but there wasn't that sort of setting the scene where, hey, buddy, why don't you come work for me? It was more like, I really need someone to work. Your resume seems to be great. You come with a good recommendation. Can you work these days? Great. Fantastic. So not a very sexy story, but at the same time for me, you know, I was really primed to enter the world of bartending and spirits and making, you know, craft cocktails, which is something I'd never really done before. But I was very interested in it. I was like one of those bar backs that was, you know, standing behind a bartender, like, hey, what if you put this in there? What if you put that in there? Mm-hmm. I would have been that annoying person, but I hadn't gotten that opportunity. So for me with Aaron, I just didn't want to let the guy down. I didn't want to make him feel like, oh, I made a big mistake hiring this guy. He's an idiot. Yeah. So I was like on my tippy toes for a while there. And, I have to credit you and some of the other people we worked with to really bring me down to earth and be like, stop taking it so seriously. It's okay. And then even Aaron, as I got to know him, he's like, it's fine. You're okay. You're going to be okay. Make sure you have a good time, which is, and I guess we'll talk about this a little further as our conversation goes along. That was the best advice and the worst advice I could have ever gotten from Aaron. It's just how you take that advice that really pans out in the long run, I guess.
Yeah, I remember because when you started there, so I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, but it's when the restaurant started, not a lot of structure. We'll just put it that way. I'll just put it lightly with that. And you know, that's how it goes with a lot of new places and that sort
of
stuff.
That's exactly how it goes. And you know, everyone's learning as they go. With how a particular how a particular organism is going to work. It's like opening night of a show. I mean, you can practice, you can know your lines, you can have a great cast on paper, but then things go wrong. And then you make adjustments and replacements, and it gets better and gets smoother and it gets tighter, and there are ups and downs. I mean, you're a theater guy, you know this. So it is what it is. I wasn't there for the beginning like you were, but yeah.
Well, I remember you came back. Go ahead, Gabby.
Well, I'm trying to figure out who this guy is, right? And so hearing those two stories, I'm like, oh, is he kind of an off the cuff guy that hires someone while he's presumably drunk doing karaoke and like no references, no resume? Or is he kind of like a smart, I assume, manager who's like looking at references and resume? Like, is it two sides of the same person? Does he have kind of this duality to him? Did he have this duality to him?
Ashish, I'm going to say Aaron shot from the hip.
I was going to say, yes, you're right. I wouldn't disagree with you. To answer your question, Gabby, to speak to that point, I would say he was probably a very unique and seldom seen mixture of both of those things, where he could, you know, be doing karaoke with Lou late on a snowy night and be like, hey, you want to come work for me? You seem like a nice guy. We'll fit it in somehow. And then at the next morning, he's like, I need to hire somebody for this position. Let me look at the resume, you know, because he did take his craft very seriously, but he didn't take himself seriously at all. there was that, you know, beautiful and volatile mixture of both.
Okay.
Yeah. When you first started on there, I just remember I worked a shift with you on the downstairs bar. And you basically turned to me, and the problem is this portion of our life is so fuzzy due to several reasons. I can't remember the exact conversation, but you basically said to me, you're like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yes.
Because it was a madhouse. And I said something, maybe you could remember this, but I said something along the lines of, yeah, it is. And there's not a lot of structure here, but guess what? There's not a lot of structure here.
what does that mean, though? Not a lot of structure. Like, people don't have schedules, or like there's.
Let me translate that statement for Lou through my lens. So, I came from a place where everything was in the workplace very structured. So, to answer your first point of, you know, people being scheduled and, you know, punching in and punching out on time, of course. But beyond that, you know, you have to wear this uniform all the time. You have to punch in all the things that you're sending out to guests. You have to comport yourself in a particular way when you're on the floor. And if you didn't do that, like, there was hell to pay. So to go back, the person that sort of put my name in Aaron's ear got fired from this other place that I worked. Because he was a little bit loosey-goosey, as Lou remembers. So when I went to Lou, and I am starting to remember that night, and I think it was not my first night working. I think I was staging there that night with you, Lou, downstairs, and with Nick Weinstock upstairs afterwards. But we knew each other. So I was like with you, and I saw what was going on. And I'm not talking about what was going on the customer side of the bar, Gabby. Right. I'm talking about what's going on in the employees, the responsible side of the bar. And yes, I did to some point, like, I think Lou and somebody else did like a couple of shots, one well down, and I looked over.
All right, this is what I want to know.
What the fuck is going on here? And Lou came over, and he was basically like, look, man, it's going to be fine. Have a drink. And it was like 6:30 in the evening. Have a drink. I know you got like 9 hours left on your shift. It's fine. Loosen up. And you know what? You can loosen up.
Funny. The totality of it is basically we were rip-roaring drunk for 9 hours a night at all times. It never stopped ever. You know, I did this until I was maybe 30 or 31 or something. And then I started taking Mondays off from drinking. But I was obliterated 7 nights a week for maybe 10 years, maybe 12 years, something like that. But Ashish came back, and we were just kind of making up the rules as we went and doing the things that we went. He's like, he was like, what the fuck is this? Like, what kind of carnival circus ass bullshit is this? But I was like, yeah, it's a carnival-ass bullshit circus, and that could be a lot of fun. Do you want to have some fucking fun? And Ashish is like, I think I do. You know? So that was
the beginning. I was ready to have fun.
It was a beautiful relationship.
Yes. Yes.
So that sort of fun probably eventually has its cost. What did that start to look like?
Well, you know, it didn't really start having any cost for me until I started entering into my early 30s. Because I just feel like at that point, so Ashish and I kind of had a deal that when Ashish sat at my bar, I would literally try to murder him with alcohol. And when I sat at Ashish's bar, he would literally try to murder me with alcohol. But I got to tell you, like when Ashish sat at your bar, it was like trying to kill a piece of cast iron. It was impossible. You couldn't do it. You could just keep pulling a full whiskey.
This is why I stay out of Boston.
Yeah. I was like, God damn, this guy's invincible. But we were kind of invincible back then. Didn't it feel that way, Ashish?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it now, and I look at it through one lens of, oh man, those were some great times that will never happen again. Neither should they. They're meant to happen once in your life, and if you survive and get through it, you have these great stories that you can tell, you know, with the people that you went through that time with, that you can pass on to your kids or whoever. You can be that old guy at like the VFW. Oh, there was that one time. Blah, blah, blah. But from another lens, I look at it and, you know, I didn't realize how much of a toll it was taking even then. And I didn't fully appreciate that until, I mean, honestly, quite recently, to be honest. And I think it's like where, like you have to move on to some extent from that portion of your life. You have to come out the other side and kind of maybe have a realization of what the other things you might have missed out on because you were having that good time. And that's like for anything, right? So I'm not trying to say, oh, you know, we shouldn't have done that, this, that, and the other thing. But you know, there are relationships that I damaged during that time.
Yep. Same.
Family relationships, other personal relationships. You know, there's been irrevocable damage done to my health. You know, nothing that's so awful that I'm going to be in the hospital tomorrow. But, you know, as I'm getting older, I feel it. And, you know, when I go to the doctor, he's like, yeah, you've taken some years off your life, my friend. Maybe you should stop doing all these things now.
Ashish, the thing that I miss the most that I honestly, I've just become acquainted with it because of Aaron. 90% of it is just gone of those days, Ashish.
Well, 90% there's that too.
Gone.
The details are all gone.
They're all gone.
I don't have the stories to tell that I wish I had. You know, like,
yeah.
I know that I have stories and there were good times, but because of what we did, that's all I can really say. And Gabby, if you were like to, like, if we were to, the three of us were sitting down, you know, at a bar or a restaurant, and like we were really talking about, just like, well, tell me about something that, like, what was the best time? It wouldn't just come to me. Like, I'd really need to think about it and like do association, like object association. And, you know, if I see a bottle of Fernet on the side of a truck, they'll be like, oh yeah, there was that time that, you know, Aaron and I opened the bar every day and we had to be at work at 10 o'clock. And the very first thing we did was three shots of Fernet, the both of us. And if I got there first, he'd walk in the door and he'd be like, rack them up.
Wow. Yeah. Oh man. No, but I never worked in hospitality, and having done this podcast a few times now, I feel like I missed like the cool kids club or something whenever, like I was always late to everything.
Ashish,
anyway.
What a
like,
victory for us. Somebody called us cool. Who would have thought?
It is.
But like, I have like a micro example of this where I finally, I went to a comedy show for the first time since COVID, and I was so excited for it that I drank too much, and I knew the comedian was funny, but I don't remember any of her jokes because I was just like so excited to go. But I kind of feel like that's just like, oh yeah, there was something about a dog and that was funny, but I don't really know what the punchline was.
I remember it being funny, but I don't remember why.
Exactly. So you just have kind of a halo of like good times around those years, but you don't exactly know what that is.
And they're all kind of like mixed up. In like right. they kind of meld into one another. So mm-hmm. before we get on to some of the heavier stuff, which must be addressed, frankly, right. I wanted to pay a quick tribute to Aaron with a couple of things. And I'm remembering it just because you literally just said it. And Ashish, and we've talked about this before, about how formative he was for me, and the same for you, because I was doing a little bartending before I met Aaron, but it was just like, all right, can you put soda and vodka in a glass? Can you do that? You know, like, so that's basically it, you know. But it's, he kind of taught me that there was an art to it and a science, and you could add your influence to the cultural fabric, you know. You could be creative, and you know, and like this is something like a drink that I made and handed to Aaron. It's still on the menu there, Russell House Tavern, like 11 years later. It's still on the menu. It's great. But you get a chance to actually add to the social fabric, which is really cool. And when I started there, he handed me a book called Imbibe by Dave Wondrich. If anybody's out there looking to learn about spirits and that sort of stuff, great starting point. And he said, sign up for this course, which is called Bar Smarts. And I still, to this day, hand that book to new guys. And I still give the materials I had from that course, hand them over to new girls who want to learn about this sort of stuff. And Ashish, you said this before, you know, he always had this phrase that I still tell to everybody. And you basically said it, you know, always take your craft seriously. Never take yourself seriously. Mm. And like, what a credo to live by. I think about it all the time. I pass it on to young guys and young girls all the time, because it's a great way to live your life. And because of that, I've read books and researched things, and I feel like my life is so much more fulfilling with this aspect that I didn't even know existed, really. And I owe it all to him. Okay, so I you know, now that I feel like I have paid tribute to a guy who really meant so much to me, and I had kind of forgotten how much he meant to me, I want to talk about a bit more of a difficult issue. And that's, you know, basically drug and alcohol abuse. I wasn't really too much of a drug guy, but I, really hit the bottle hard. I used to have a saying, people would ask me, you know, oh, how much do you drink, you know, in a week? And I'd be like, you know, take whatever definition of alcoholism you can find in a medical journal and multiply that by 5. And that's right about where I am, you know? And like, I just have these so many stories, especially in those Russell House days, you know, 7 days a week trash. I remember New Year's Eve, I was working with Kyle. I don't know, I probably shouldn't use last name, so I won't. So Kyle and Colin and Aaron was upstairs, and we used to have-
Oh, you're tradition. Using names at all.
Right. Person A.
Yeah, person A, person B.
Well, you know, so it was New Year's, and I remember we used to have a game we could play to see how many Kir Royales we could drink in one night. It's just
what was wrong with you guys?
Yeah, a lot. But you know, I remember one night we got to like 14 or something, and that is along with all the other whiskey shots and all this sort of stuff.
Oh, God.
And one of the managers came back behind the bar. He's like, Lou, what the fuck? He's like, you're drunk. What's going on? He's like, and he points to Kyle. He's like, all right, you're in charge back here. And on cue, Kyle drops the bottle that he was carrying and shatters it on the ground. And he points to Colin. He's like, all right, you're in charge. And Colin's just like, he doesn't even know where he is. And he's like, all right, fine. You're Lou. You're in charge. He circled all the way around. And back to me, because
you're still working at that time. Like you're.
Oh
you're
yeah,
still
we had like 3 hours left in the shift.
Oh my god!
And he continued to work after that shift too.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my god!
Subsequent days.
But this is the part that I wanted to say, but say lightly. As bad as we were back in those days, Aaron always found a way to top us, you know, because that night, as much as we had that night, Aaron was on the upstairs bar and he came down and he was so drunk, he couldn't even count his drawer. Like he couldn't even do numbers. So I remember, despite the fact that I had all those drinks, I had to count his drawer for him that night. And as much abuse as we did an almost unimaginable amount of abuse, Aaron always found a way to top it, you know? And, you know, Gabby, you talked about like, what was the cost, right? And I started, until I was like 30 or 31, I really didn't feel any sort of cost that I was aware of at the time. Mm-hmm. But at some point, my brain stopped working, you know, like in the way that you need it to do. And I have this kind of thing that I say, you know, you can get, you know, work your body out, you know, and get a really fit body, and you can get your bank account high and have lots of money. But if your brain isn't working, what's the fucking point of any of it? Like if your brain, if like your neurons are cloudy and you can't fucking think right, what's the point of any of this stuff? So I had to start cutting down in a big way, and I've cut down a lot, and I still drink on the weekends, but I've cut down a lot since then. But Aaron couldn't, you know, he couldn't cut down. And I started looking back at the text that I had with him right before this. I was just looking back, and they only go back to about 2014. So not all the way back, but you know, in the beginning of the text, we were having a lot of conversations about, oh, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, and how about this movie, and blah, 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 blah. But later on, you know, he started having a lot of, you know, legal problems, and he started asking for money and all this sort of stuff. So the drink got a hold of him so hard that it got him in the end. And that's really difficult to think about, because you think about it and the way that we lived our life, you know, I think about, did I really possibly drink that much and do that much and all this sort of stuff? Yeah. And it was enough to kill some of us. It was enough to literally end some of our friends' lives. And that's a really sobering thought. It's horrifying. Like, do you ever think about that, Ashish?
Yeah. I mean, I'm, forgive me, I'm a little all over the place, so it's a little more free association with me right now. But I wanted to go back one second with something you were talking about, how, you know, as much as you guys did that night, and you all did, and we did, and I'm me as well, of course, Aaron and I would typically work Saturday nights upstairs together, that he came down that night and he was even more wasted than the three of you, so much so that he couldn't count his drawer. You know, you could depend on him to, as bad as we all got, you could dependably say that he was most often worse, and he probably started a lot earlier than all of us did back then. As I said, he was drinking at 10 a.m., doing shots of Fernet and Eagle Rare and whatnot. But at the same time, regardless of how in the bag he was, I feel like he always had our back.
Oh, yeah.
Which
absolutely,
I cannot say that I've ever experienced that again since I worked with him to the degree that I got from him. And I think that speaks more about the type of person that he was deep down inside. And, you know, I'm going to talk about, you know, how much he drank and how it affects me and how much I drink and stuff like that. But I will say that it's a shame that he's gone and the drink got him, so to speak, and all the ancillary problems that come with having that dependence, let's say. But he exemplified loyalty in a way that I have rarely seen in our industry.
We were a team. Oh, we were in it together. Yes. We one shot for one guy was a shot for everybody. And we were all like, you know, when I worked for him, he had my back in a pretty big way. Where one person who, you know, Ashish, tried to get me fired one day, And I told my version of the story and Aaron had my back on it, you know?
Yeah.
And then he stayed with me, but you're right. He was, for all his faults and foibles, of which I had the very same faults and foibles. We always had your back.
Yeah, we all did. The other thing in regards to his usage and dependence on alcohol, to go back again to what one of the things that he said to you, you know, take your craft seriously, but don't take yourself, never take yourself seriously, which from one lens is what a beautiful thing to say and what a beautiful maxim to live your life by. Maybe he didn't take himself seriously enough at times.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we are where we are. Maybe if he did take himself just a little more seriously in a few instances, we wouldn't have be having this conversation about him. Maybe that would have been just enough for him to clean up his act just enough where, you know, he would have found a way to get by or get through the difficulty, whether it was physical, financial, emotional, or psychological. Because I don't know if we'll really know the answer to that question. In terms of my own history and use and abuse of drugs and alcohol, drugs, I've never been a drugs person. Drugs never really appealed to me. I've tried a lot of drugs once and I've been like, okay, I did that. I'll move on to, I'll have a drink now, essentially. I used to drink, like a lot of people, a lot of beer in my youth. I used to think that I knew how to drink wine, but I didn't until much later. And I probably drank spirits in the way that, I don't know, 70 to 80% of Americans drink spirits, which is, you know, your vodka soda, gin and tonic, whiskey, ginger kind of person. And, you know, meeting Aaron and working with all of you, you guys on that team and other people since then has really like blown my mind. You know, I wouldn't know what I know now if I hadn't met Aaron, as you said, and have worked with people like you and Kyle and some of the other people that we've worked with throughout the years. The more I learned, the more I discovered I liked. It didn't help that the formative experience of learning about those things was in an environment where you were encouraged to drink as much of them as possible at the same time. So although I did and do take my craft seriously, I never drank with the intent that I probably should have, considering what we were doing. I never drank with the intent of, let me order a really nicely made cocktail, let me enjoy it for a while, and let me move on to something else. I was making really nice, well-balanced cocktails with you and, you know, experimenting with different things and getting the highs of really knocking it out of the park and getting a cocktail on the menu, on the cocktail list, and people ordering it, you know, month after month after month. But at the same time, that's not the life I was living. I was living the shots of Fernet life and the Eagle Rare and then, you know, whatever, tequila, mezcal as the years go on. So do I regret any of that time at Restaurant Tavern? Absolutely not. Do I regret doing it to the extent that I did? I do and I don't. I don't regret it because I never want any of those times to have been different. I never want to say I didn't have fun with you guys. I didn't learn a lot with you guys. I didn't get into shenanigans with you guys. And God knows I did. And you were around for some of that too.
Yeah.
But I know that doing that affected me later. So, you know, fast forward, you know, this was what, Lou, 10 years ago, 11 years ago when we worked together there?
Probably 11 or 12, something like that. Yeah.
11 or 12 years ago. So fast forward to last year. So last year was a tough year for a lot of people, 2020 and 2021. Fast forward to last year, my father-in-law was in the hospital, went into the hospital October of 2020. And he ended up passing in January of 2021. He never came home, right? This is a tragedy, but people go through it every day. So, you know, we live in Martha's Vineyard. He was at Mass General. So we're going back and forth all the time. We have a restaurant to open and we just survived 2020 and COVID and 2021. You know, hopefully things are going to get easier, but are they getting easier? Are they not getting easier? We don't know. 2021. My wife and I decide, you know, early in 2021 that, you know, we want to try to start a family. So, you know, luckily we're able to get pregnant very quickly. And as we've discovered, happens to almost 50% of pregnancies these days, ends in a miscarriage. So now I'm going into 2021 restaurant season with, you know, I've lost my father-in-law, who I was very close to, close with. And, you know, I'm 46. I never thought about having a child. First time I try to have a child, child dies. You know, it's tough on me, tough on my wife. She also lost her father as well. Starting a restaurant or opening the restaurant. Tough year in the restaurant. Guests, as great as they were in 2020, were really difficult in 2021. Not going to lie. You know, people were tough in 2021 to deal with in hospitality. Everyone was tired of COVID, tired of masks, tired of the surge in the summertime. And the point of me telling you all of this is not to say, oh man, sheesh, you had a tough year. We all had a tough year. The point is that because of my time with Aaron and Russell House Tavern and subsequent years after that, it was very easy for me to mask any kind of pain or difficulty I was having by just hitting the bottle. It was so easy. And it wasn't easy in the sense of, you know, I financially could go out and get drinks. Or it wasn't even easy in the sense of, oh, I run a restaurant. I can just go down to the liquor room and drink whatever I want. You know what was easy is I could have the eighth shot of whiskey and I felt fine. I felt no different than having the first shot of whiskey because the whiskey to my body tasted and the reaction was the same as having a cup of coffee. Because I've had so much alcohol for mm-hmm. so many years now, and I've had it in such a way that it's so second nature for my body to just be like, I could have a glass of orange juice or I could have 6 ounces of whiskey and it would be the same thing. And that at some point this season, like I realized, like I have to stop doing this. First of all, I realized I was self-medicating and I think the fact that we do work in restaurants, and this is more of the, if you work in restaurants, if you work in hospitality, if you're people like us, it's very natural to just do that. It's just the easiest way to handle pain, to handle uncertainty. And because you associate having drinks with a good time, like we talked about for the last 30 minutes, oh, those times were great. You think that the times will somehow get better. I think that learning about Aaron dying, and I had made changes in my life before this even happened, before Aaron passed and we started talking about it. I recognized that, you know, I just need to be healthier. You were saying you started cutting down at 31. Hell, I didn't even meet you till I was 35. So I was mm-hmm. in my late 30s when I was having those times with you.
Yeah.
So I'm like 10 years later, I'm starting to cut down. And I'm glad I have. Do I miss doing that stuff? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think when I found out that Aaron had passed, and it sounds awful, but for me, I feel like, man, I dodged a bullet because I recognized something before it got to be too late.
Yeah.
And it could have been me. It could have been me. It could be so many of our friends, Lou, the ones that maybe we're not in touch with that often, that we've fallen out of touch with, because we're not working together anymore. I mean, you mentioned Colin before. I don't know what Colin's doing. I don't know where Colin is. I love Colin. God bless Colin. I hope he's well, but I don't know. And because he was a part of that and I've struggled with it and Aaron has died from it, who's to say, you know? And that's it. I mean, that's just, that's what it is about working in this industry is we celebrate it, rightfully so. We celebrate the times and the camaraderie. But I think it's important that we not brush under the rug. We're there for each other when we want to have a good time. And I think it's important that we're there for each other just as much. And we look after one another just as much when maybe things aren't going well.
Yeah. That's something I, you know, I said this in the beginning where you start thinking about your own mortality, right? Because the lifestyle we lived was, you know, because I look back on it with rose colored glasses. And but when I think about it, I was living a very disposable lifestyle. I was disposable. My relationships were disposable. Everything was disposable. I don't know if this doesn't work out. All right, throw that away, get a new X. If Y isn't making me happy today, let's just fucking throw it out, get a new Y, you know? And that's not a great way to live.
I thought you meant like exes and like ex-girlfriend. Like, I want a new ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't take very long in those days. She would be my ex-girlfriend rather quickly because I was an idiot.
Easily. Oh my God.
Yeah. But
can I ask maybe a delicate question? What did he actually die of?
So I have not seen a coroner's report or anything like that, but I'm not going to give out specifics. But I've heard from some people closer to the situation that essentially his liver failed and he got it to a part where he had done so much that he had kind of passed the point of no return. Even if he quit altogether, it was kind of too late for him. So that's sad. And it makes you think about like what we did in those days. Oh my God, it was so much fun at the time, but it was so much that not everybody makes it out, you know, and you said it, Ashish, we're lucky to have made it out. I'm not trying to say that I was in fucking Motley Crue or something like hammering.
But it's an indescribable situation. I think that and Gabby, I'd love to hear what you have to say since you've never worked in the restaurant industry and you're just hearing all of this from us. And maybe we're not describing it in a way that does it justice. Sometimes I think it's hard to describe it until you actually do it. It's kind of like people who suffer from depression and family members are like, what do you mean you're depressed? It's like, well, I can't, like, you got to be depressed to understand what that really means to some extent. You can clinically understand it through DSM and you know, reading about it and hearing things about it, but feeling it is something different. And I think that, I mean, are we communicating clearly enough? I guess, like, it sounds very hypocritical the way I talk about it. Like, I wouldn't change those times for anything. But at the same time, there's a part of me that's like, man, I wish I could have those friendships and those experiences, but be like 10 times healthier right now. Yeah. You know, it's very much of wanting your cake and eating it too.
And I
can say that in retrospect, but I'm saying that in the sense of, look, I know I'm being a hypocrite. And I know I can't take rewind time. And if you gave me a magic pill where I could rewind time, would I do it differently? I don't know. Maybe I'd do it still the same. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, what are your thoughts just hearing Lou and I talk about it like this?
I mean, I think it's a very relatable experience that people have probably in a smaller scale where, like, man, I mean, so I don't drink very much. So when I drink, like, I feel the repercussions the next day pretty strongly. And even, you know, I get drunk on like 2 drinks. That's just for kind of reference. Whereas like 8 shot and it's just nothing. But so, you know, it's fun. Like, it's fun. Like, I usually say, like, I have the taste buds of like a 10-year-old because I think alcohol tastes bad. Like, I literally don't like the taste of alcohol. So when
once you've drank 50 or 60 gallons of it, you get over that.
There's no taste anyway.
You power through it.
It's like the first time you have coffee, it tastes like crap. Yeah. But once you start
drinking I don't like coffee. Yeah. Like, I was just really stubborn. We're like, I want to taste only good things in my life. So I just never got over that hurdle. So when I, you know, often people are like, oh, I don't drink to get drunk. I just like the taste. I'm like, no, if I'm drinking, I'm drinking to get drunk. It's not the taste. I'm putting as much Coke in it, like Coca-Cola or, you know, mixers or whatever. But I get the, you know, that's what that alcohol is. It's a euphoric kind of drug that makes you feel like in harmony with the people you're around, feel like you're so much more fun. But the problem I think is, you know, it's such a nefarious, like alcoholism is such a nefarious disease because it can kill you in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah,
it can cause depression. It can like actually injure your body. It could, you know, make you irresponsible behind the wheel of a car. You know, there's so many like ways that it ends poorly, but especially when people, like I know a guy who never gets hangovers and he drinks like a monster and he never feels the repercussions of that. And I think that's a big part of it too, is like, you, if you can get over that initial hurdle of like, oh, I get hungover like the first couple times, or I feel like stupid. Like if you don't have that accountability earlier on, you just kind of build up your tolerance and you don't actually have to pay that cost for decades down the road.
I think that's probably what it's been like for me, as Lou was saying, like he could never drink me to death. And I don't think I've had a hangover in 10 years. I can't.
Yeah. I mean, lucky you.
It's truly phenomenal. I literally tried to commit homicide behind that bar and I couldn't do it.
I don't have like that mechanism where it's just like, okay, you need to stop.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it very kind of clinically, hangovers are your body, I mean, and like even feeling drunk and your mind being fuzzy, that's your body telling you like, this is not good for you. This is a poison. This hurts.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to that though. You know,
but if you drink so much that your body essentially is like, well, he's not listening anyway, I'm going to turn this off. Yeah. And then you kind of continue living your life. Right. And that's, you know, that's the danger of it. But like, you know, I feel jealous hearing about all these like fun. I was never the one, like, my first experience drinking was, it was like a beach trip with my entire high school class after we graduated. And I'd never drank at all through high school, that everyone was just so like, the novelty of me drinking was such that people were like, here, have a drink on me. And I was like, all right, free drinks. And, but like, it was never like a big part of my life, but it, you know, it seems to me listening to these stories that there was like a formative kind of bonding experience that happened through drinking. And that I can relate to that again in kind of smaller degree, but you know, the way that particularly like industry people, I just hear that they're, you know, the loyalty that Aaron had, I think is shared by a lot of people in that industry, because you're kind of in the ranks with them, and you depend on, you have your highs and lows with those people. And of course the highs are celebrated with alcohol and the lows are medicated with alcohol. So
it's a whole inescapable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a
really
So what I wanted to kind of, you know, wrap it up on is, we've talked about a lot of hard stuff. But you know, I think about, would I change anything from those days? Well, it's tough to say because I remember like 10% of it. But it was such
an maybe remembering more.
What's that?
Maybe the ability to remember more.
That's But it was such an incredible, it was probably the most fun I've ever had in my life, like those 2.5-3 years, whatever it was. And basically I owe it all to Aaron. And one thing I wanted to also say is, he had one of the best palates and one of the best ability to create that I've ever met. His cocktail ability was really second to none. And his ability to create new, you know, essentially genius cocktails was very, very impressive. So, and it's really sad that that kind of talent isn't around anymore. And that's one thing, you know, Ashish and I are old. So I don't want to sound like old guy, you know, just, oh, I know better than you. So, but you know, there's a lot of 22-year-old guys and girls out there who are starting or hitting it really hard. And it's fine. Do your thing. Have fun. You're young. You can do that. But just know, not everyone makes it out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about that.
Yes.
You just have your fun. You're young. Do your thing. I'm the last person on earth who could tell anybody to not do that, because I did it 1,000 times over, but not everybody makes it out. And Aaron Butler will miss the fuck out of you. Mentor, friend, loyal guy. I wish you were here. You know, I wish you were here to talk to you and chat with you and pick your brain, because you was a candle that didn't burn the longest, but he burned very bright and affected so many people along the way. And I want to do a shot of whiskey to tribute to him, but like, is that even the right thing to do? I don't know.
Yes, I know. I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a very formative person. And without Aaron, the amount of love that I have in my life currently would be decimated. It would be a tenth of the love that I have in my heart now, because I would be missing out on so much fucking love from people that I have such incredible fond memories of, that I've spent so much time with and done amazing things with. That love would have never existed in my life. And Ashish, you're one of those fucking guys. I love you. And I'm so happy that we were lucky enough to make it out. So I love you, pal. Yeah. I love Aaron. And for anybody who's listening to it, do a tribute in your own way. And if you want to chat about it, we should have a celebration of Aaron. If anybody hears this and want to chat about it, hit me up and we can talk about it. Ashish, any final words on that?
No, I mean, I agree with you 100%. We were, I would say we were lucky to have that time with him. We were lucky to at least at this point in our life, get out of the dark side of what can happen. And yeah, I mean, he was, not everyone will necessarily see it the same way that you and I do, and those of us that worked with him behind the bar. But he was a very kind, generous, loyal, thoughtful, funny person who took what he chose to do with his life very, very seriously. And regardless of how he died, or, you know, regardless of the faults of, you know, the lifestyle that he chose to have, he probably wouldn't have been the person that we all miss so much if he didn't live his life that way. So yeah, I'll miss him. I hadn't thought of him for a really long time until you told me that he died, but you know, I've been thinking of him every day since then in one way or another. And I'll miss him every day. And you know, if there's anything I want to take from Aaron not being with us any longer, it's really that. It's just being generous and being kind and being loyal, and not taking things as seriously as you think you need to in certain times, not being as angry as you could get at a situation, not being, you know, as sad as you could get the situation, just, you know, moderating. He moderated good in life. He didn't moderate good with alcohol, but yeah. But with everything else, he was, you know, we'll try better next time. That was the kind of guy he was. So
yeah. Great guy. In his honor, I want to close out today's show by playing a game that I literally just thought up in my dumb brain. It's a game called Eulogy. And it's spelled Y-O-U-L-O-G-Y because I'm so smart. What a clever guy I am. But yeah, they have no idea how to play this game. Right, Ashish?
I have no idea how to play this game.
Right, Gabby?
None. Absolutely.
Okay,
zero.
So here's how we're going to play this game. All three of us are going to give us two things. One thing you really hope is said at your eulogy. And number two, one thing you really hope is not said at your eulogy. And then we'll move on to the mysterious second part of the game. I will start. I wish I had thought of what I was going to say beforehand, but I did not. So I would really hope that people would say he always showed up. you know, because see, you could say a lot of things and words was, I show up, you know? So I hope people would say that I show up. One thing I hope people don't say, God, like how many choices are there? I hope people forget about the way that I treated people for about 15 years. I hope nobody brings that part up. So,
I'm glad I met Lou when I did, because it's any earlier, and I don't know.
All right. So, Gabby, we're going to move on to you. One thing you hope someone says at your funeral, and one thing you hope no one says.
All right. One thing I hope they say is, man, what a creative genius that birthed such interesting ideas into society and into our world. I'm dreaming big here, guys. I gotta, you know, play hard. One thing I hope they don't say is, I don't know. I don't know, like, oof.
That's a tough one, right?
Maybe he's like, she had a good personality. Like, implying
that's
that
always a tough one, It's
like, she had a great personality.
It's a tough one.
How is she? She's not, I hope no one says I'm nice. That would suck if someone said, she was really nice.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so Ashish, we're going to move on to you. One thing you hope is said at your eulogy, one thing you hope is not said.
This is tough, man. This is, wow. One thing I hope that is said at my eulogy is, I have no idea.
Come on.
I guess I'm not going to think as grand as you, Gabby. I guess if there's one thing that I would want to hear over and over again at my eulogy or at a eulogy, would just be that I was a kind person. I don't want to be known as at the end of my life, the totality that I was a mean person. So a kind person. And one thing I wish that no one would, that people wouldn't say, I guess is like, something to the effect of, he wasted a lot of opportunities.
God, that's a good one, Ashish. Oh my God. All right. So we're all set up here. Okay. So we are going on to the second round of eulogy. What is that? We are all going to eulogize one another. That's right. We're going to take the two pieces of information and use them to give a eulogy. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to give Gabby's eulogy. Gabby's two facts. One thing she wanted was for people to say, man, what a creative genius. And what she didn't want people to say was, great personality. She was nice. So we're going to incorporate those two things. And I'm going to begin right now. Thank you. We are gathered here today to celebrate.
You need to be crying more, Lou. You need to be crying way more than that. That's better.
Gabriella, who was a beautiful, bright, shining star, who sadly last week was eaten by a tiger shark off the coast of West Palm Beach in Florida. It was terrible, but boy, could she write that comic strip that she wrote, and her zine was the most popular zine in her high school, and her political caricatures were so wonderful, and gosh, the singing voice on she could scat, she could do jazz scat right off the top of her head, and she was very what is that thing I hear from beyond the grave? Oh my God. But even better than that, oh boy, when you looked at her, she walked into the room, you just thought, oh, what a great personality she had. And you would go to the beach with Gabby and laying out in the sun, you'd be like, oh, she was so nice. And we will miss Gabby. If you see that tiger shark, you know, to give him, to look at him and give him a head shake. Bad shark. Thank you, Gabby. You will be missed. Okay, so that's Gabby's eulogy.
There's a montage now of all okay. of me looking super hot, right, in front yeah. of the books that I've published.
Looking very nice, very nice. Okay, so now, Ashish, are you ready to get eulogized?
Oh, sure.
All right.
Here's the caveat. In my last will and testament, it will say that I do not want a eulogy.
Well, so too fucking bad.
This is going against my witches. Going against my witches.
All right,
this isn't
Gabby.
A eulogy. This is a spoken word poem.
Oh, slam poetry.
Okay, I like it. I like
that. That doesn't rhyme. So just a reminder, he wanted to say that he was kind. Right?
Kind, yep.
And did not want to hear that he was mean.
Well, wasted a lot of opportunities.
Oh,
is what
okay.
He said.
Yeah. He said both, but okay. Wasted.
Okay. So Gabby, right. Let's hear Ashish's eulogy.
Okay. All right. Ashish, what a kind, kind man. He looked like Santa in the off season, but he was kind. He was kind. He was kind to Ooh, all.
It's got a nice rhythm.
He knew. It's got to be, it's slam poetry, dude. And when opportunity came knocking, he said, no, sir. And that, my friends, was a shh.
It's like a B-52 song.
Snaps.
Snaps. Snaps. Snaps. Snaps.
You can just record that. You can save that recording for your untimely death,
perfect.
Whenever that
That's
does
great.
Happen. And it's already ready to go.
That's great. People will be like, who's that? What's
just hit play.
Yes. All right. Well, what a wonderful eulogy. And we're coming full circle. Ashish, you have the honor to give my eulogy when I died in 6 to 8 weeks. So for a reminder, I said
yes.
that I
showed
wanted
up.
Showed up and I didn't want people to talk about the way I was to people for
the way sometimes you didn't show up.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
He showed up.
Exactly. There's a period of my life called my 20s, and maybe I should have done better.
Okay. Here we go. All right, friends. We all know why we're here. We're here to talk about Lou, our friend, Lou Sabin. What can we say about Lou except that no matter what happened, no matter where you were, no matter what he was doing or not doing, if you needed him to, he showed up. He showed up for his friends. He showed up for his family. He was always there in one way or another. And he always had a drink for you too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lou lived such a great and charmed life. I still remember hearing about the time where he didn't have any money or a job. He was basically hired off the street. And
showed up to that bar.
Changed the trajectory of his life. Onto a new in the back, somebody's yelling onto a new. Okay. Lou went on to do many things with his life, but somehow he always found his way back to being on the other side of the bar and giving you a drink when you needed it the most. Although he did retire from trying to murder you at the bar. That was something he did in his 20s. A period of his life where that we really don't like to talk about too much, his 20s. Not proud of that period of his life too much, but, you know, to his credit, he doesn't remember much of it anyway, so what can we do? But we remember Lou, and we'll remember him now and forever when we have our Always Sunnies. Let's all raise our glasses of Always Sunnies.
The
Lou say,
oh, God, yeah. I gotta tell you, if someone gives my eulogy and they finish it off with a, but what are you gonna do? That's about as good.
Not a thing, but a boom. He was there.
You know,
he wasn't.
Some stuff.
Now he's gone. Yeah.
There was some stuff in there. Did we talk
There's
about
more to
that?
Go in
Probably
the next
not.
Room. Let's go eat.
Well, that has been today's episode of Prognosis Awesome, dedicated to the memory of a mentor, friend, and beloved. Just what a gentleman, Aaron Butler. In the focus on the the way he lived his life, how creative he was, how awesome he was, and how good of a friend that he was, and the tragedy of his too early passing. Ashish, there's a circle of life, isn't there, Ashish? Sometimes with death comes new beginnings.
I wanted to
hear from Ashish a recently discovered new beginning that's starting in your life, right?
Yes, new beginnings. Aaron leaves us as people leave us all the time, and other people come into our lives. So while we'll be having a baby girl soon in July.
Mazel tov!
Thank you. We will see if they are Jewish or not. But Mazel tov works for the time being. We're very excited. So yes, as you said it best, and especially now at our age where we're starting to see our peers, our friends, and our colleagues slowly succumb to the inevitability of decline and death, we're seeing others welcome new lives into their families. So I guess we can't live like we did in our 20s anymore.
We can't do that, but we can bring new life, new possibilities, and new promise into this world. Congratulations to Ashish, you and your wife. You two are wonderful. I can't wait to see you guys this summer. Thank you so much for coming on, Ashish.
Absolutely, and anytime.
And Gabby, thank you so much for listening to us drone on and talk about feelings we don't understand. You're the best.
Always a pleasure.
Yes. And that is today's episode of Prognosis Awesome. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back soon. Pay tribute in your own way. Whatever that is, whatever that means to you. But do it, because he was a cool fucking guy, man. And he meant a lot to so many of us. And with that said, we will see you later.